This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Hello and welcome to Lovers of Life, a series which explores the independent Dublin music scene in 2013. In this episode, we talk about the importance of attitude. We take a look at how bloggers Niler9 and Jim Carroll are finding music these days. But first up, I talk to Niler9, Hugh from Von Shakes, and Mark and Tom from The Minutes about the importance of a band's image.
Getting a good band picture and getting a good press image or doing some good artwork is sometimes as important as just a first impression about somebody, because it does, you know, you do remember that stuff, and it's a big thing, you know, and certainly in a live context as well. If somebody, sometimes you look at somebody and you go, well, you know, if you were just a bit more, if you just tried a bit harder, and I'm not saying like go get a stylist or anything, I'm just saying, you know, think about what you look like. You're a performer ultimately, or if you're in that mode, that's what you should be thinking of.
Oh, 100%, man, because in the end of the day, image is literally, if you want to be marketable, man, I guess, you know, if you're looking at the business side of things, you know, you have to kind of look the same. It's basically like, I think you got to look like, you got to look like a gang or something. Like, look at the bands like The Clash, you know, The Jam, all these bands, man, like, you know, they're just like The Strokes. They're just like the coolest looking fuckers, you know. They're all just like, they just all had an image. I think we just started kind of like subconsciously dressing the same. And now it's a case of like, we kind of wear what we want, but it ends up being very similar clothes to what we all wear. Band sheets, we'd be like, all right, lads, you know, usual. Let's just chuck on some pair of fucking, you know, black jeans, skinny jeans, some of that. Put on your boots, grab a couple of shirts, a t-shirt, something like that. Something like, you know, like things. And everybody's in their own mind is like, right, I've got my rock and roll selection of clothes or whatever. You take a couple of things, and then like Ashley and some other photographers we worked with would be like, right, you need to get some more darker clothes. And then we'd all switch up. And then sometimes, like, you know, Kill would use one of my shirts. I'd use one of Paddy's, like, you know, wife beaters or something. I don't know. Like, that kind of shit gets changed around until it kind of, like, all suits. And then, you know yourself with these photo shoots, you can take, like, 500 photos, and all you need is, like, two.
You know, there's so much music out there, like I said. So that means that you have to stand out. And one of the ways you can stand out is by actually having an image and putting yourself across in a way that, as long as it doesn't come across like you're trying too hard, then it's fine. With a band like The Stripes, they're young kids. Their music is a very specific set of influences. They look how they're supposed to look, and that's cool, and that's fine, because everyone expects that. And you got a band like Hudson Taylor, who, you know, look very slick and kind of suits their music as well. You know, they're two good looking lads, and they've got nice haircuts, and, you know, they've been doing well out of it so far.
Well, I've always looked at it like this. You're putting on a show. You're putting on, regardless of whether you're playing to 20 people in a bar or you're playing to 4,000 people in a massive venue, you're putting on a show. People are paying you money to have a good experience at your gig and to enjoy themselves. So we just don't like looking too shabby and just kind of like we've rolled out of bed, and we like to kind of maybe dress up and stick a suit or a tie on or whatever, you know what I mean, just to look sharp. And I think for me personally, it makes me feel even more confident if I think, yeah, you know, I put on a bit, you know, I put on a bit of a an outfit or whatever you want to call it, and I've gone up here, and I've, you know, the sound is good, so it helps us put on a better show if we feel good about ourselves, obviously. So
it helps, I think, as well. Like, if you're in a band, I want people to know that we're the band. If we all went in wearing a football jersey, and Tom's in a pair of tracksuit bottoms, and Shane's just fucking whatever, like, who are they? What are they doing here? What's the story? Are they the band? We don't want that. Like, you know, when we go into a venue, I want people to know that we're the band, even without knowing who we are. But as soon as we walk in, we're somebody, we're something, because we look good together, we're a group, we're a gang, we're gonna fucking do something.
The Hot Sprockets told us where their image grew from.
Yeah. What really got us into the treads was Tim used to work in like a thrift shop. Like,
yeah,
he used to work out in a gym inside a thrift shop, and it's just, yeah, had all kinds of stuff, 60s, 70s clothes, yeah. And we were just, he used to get, because he worked there every month or so, he'd get like a few free bits and bobs, and just to be telling you, was good.
And then we saw him wearing it, we were like, shit, let's get some of that shit.
We just get into the shop loads, and then end up going, oh yeah, we start getting into the clothes and all, you know. So yeah, that would have started it off. Yeah. Anyway, for me, it would have started it off.
We watch our ghost dance under neon's glow of street lamps. Let's go out and I follow the moon.
Blogging has been huge in Ireland since the middle of the last decade. Niall Byrne, who writes as Niler9, explains how he got into it.
Around 2005, you know, the concept of a blog was only just beginning, and it was something that kind of worked for me, because I started, the whole reason I had the Niler9 website was for a web portfolio, and I got a job out of that, and then I was like, well, what am I going to do with this space that I bought? Because at a time when you're like, what age was I then? So it was like 23, 24, and I was like, well, maybe I've spent money on this, I should like do something with it. So I started a blog because I'd been looking at all the American music blogs. Well, they weren't called blogs at the time, but stuff like Music for Robot and sites like that. And they were, said the Gramophone from Montreal. And they were showing me music that I'd never heard before, and I'd never heard on the radio. And it was like a portal to another world in a way, because, well, certainly another place, because you're getting music from Montreal that you'd never heard of before, getting music from America. And at that time, you know, I haven't heard anyone talking about this, anybody talking about it on the radio, in print or anything like that. I was like, well, there's a whole other world out here. And I don't hear anybody here talking about this here. And also, the other part of it for me was I wanted to just share music with my friends. And that was a big thing for me.
So where do bloggers find music? Irish Times blogger Jim Carroll shared with us how he finds music.
It really depends on the kind of band. I mean, most bands, if I'm writing about a band for the first time, I'll normally be the first or second or third person. Someone like Naomi McArdle or Niall Nine might also write about them, and I'm in there as well. And most of those bands I find out about by myself. They don't come to me, I go to them. And where I go usually to find the bands is a site called Breaking Tunes. And Breaking Tunes is a facility set up by a hard working class heroes company called First Music Contact, where any band can basically have a page and they can have their music and links to their various sites. And I think it's the best site for finding out about Irish music, because it's simple. There's no bells, there's no whistles, there's no sign up via Twitter, sign up via Facebook. No. It's simple. It's breakingtunes.com/your band's name. I go there, I hear the music, and I can search by the most recent band. It's just a brilliant facility, and that's where I find out about it. And it's really interesting, because I've noticed in the last while that often when I write about a band in the Irish Times, that I'll get an email from them a week or so later asking me, how did you find out about us? And I kind of, well, Breaking Tunes. And they don't realise the value of Breaking Tunes. They will spend all their time on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Nah. All I want to hear is the music. And in that case, I'll just go straight to Breaking Tunes. It's very as simple as that.
There's so much more music out there, that there's so much more that I like that I don't even cover, because I just don't have time. And because you have to make decisions about editorially whether you want to cover something, because a lot of other people might be covering it as well, you have to kind of check the validity of what it is you're covering and going, well, does this fit? Yes. Does this fit? No. Why doesn't it fit? Because it's been posted by 1,000 other people and doesn't need me to add to it. Or, and sometimes in that case, you'll be like, well, enough people have heard it, enough people listen to it, and you kind of go, look, this is actually great, and I think maybe if I also include this, then other people who might have dismissed it because they've seen it everywhere else might go, okay, well, maybe I should listen to it. So it's that kind of thing. I'm trying to find, in terms of a curator, you're trying to represent the best of your tastes and also the most unique in a way. So sometimes you can kind of look beyond what's happening and what everyone else is talking about and kind of trying to forge your own path.
As regards how things have changed, how bands communicate with us, well, I don't get as many crap CDs as I used to before. I get a lot of emails with links to a band's SoundCloud or a band's YouTube or a band's Bandcamp page, and that is perfect. I don't want MP3s, I don't want anything else, I don't want photographs, I don't want those awful glossy press packs that bands still send in. In fact, like, I mean, most of the times when if a band sends me a CD and a glossy press pack, I'd be quite honest about here, I don't listen to it. I don't get around to listening to it for weeks, maybe. I certainly never look at the glossy press pack. It goes straight in the recycling bin. It's a waste of their money, a waste of their time. It's absolutely nonsense, because most of the time when you're writing about a band and when you get excited about a band, they're either one, a band you found yourself, or two, a band who've got considerable word of mouth.
At the moment, I mean, there's lots of really good music out there, but sometimes good isn't good enough anymore, which is a good thing, because it means that there's so much more music to discover as well. But you kind of have to make a decision in terms of, well, will I still be listening to this in 6 months? Will I still be listening to this in a year? Will I still be listening to this in 2 years? And that's kind of my criteria for it at the moment. So, yeah, you don't always get it right, but that's, you know, the criteria.
No matter what your profession, it's important to carry yourself well and represent yourself well also. I asked Paul from Chew Your Own Fat what makes a band good to work with.
It's got to be more than the music for me. It has to be, because there's a lot of bands out there that are really, really good at what they do musically, but have no cohesion as a unit. They have no idea, like, the professional side of things, and it's quite hard to get involved with a band who are super talented but, like, hate each other, or do you know what I mean, are kind of negative about everything, and it's just, it kind of sucks the fun out of it. So I'd rather work with a band that I'm not 100% in love with their music, but I'm in love with the people. Like, they're really, really good people, and their souls are in it, and they know where they're going, and they just have a clue about the music industry. Whereas a band that whose music I might love, and, you know, I meet them and they're just, oh, they're not my kind of people, or they're just quite ignorant, or they don't really have a clue about what's going on or whatever. Like, I try and stay clear of that, because I'm not a babysitter at the end of the day. Like, I've other things to do rather than babysit bands, and, you know, I try and do that as little babysitting as possible.
Hazel and Jim gave us their opinions.
It doesn't matter how good your music is, and no matter how good your band is, if your attitude is bad, people will know it, and people will start disliking it automatically, and will dislike your band straight off. It doesn't matter if it's the lead singer is the bad person, or it's the drummer, or anybody else. If someone is in a bad mood or anything like that, you always have to kind of remember your audience there all the time to watch you. Be good with that. Like, be good to your audience. Be nice to them. Always have time for your audience, because that's the best thing. That's what's going to catch them. If you went up, if you're at a gig and someone asks for an autograph and you blow them, like, kind of just like push them away and go, no, sorry, I'm too busy, that's going to reflect badly on you. You need to go, yes, of course I will, and do it as much as possible. And that would be like, oh, they're so lovely. Have a chat with them even. Like, people remember that so much better.
I think nowadays people realise you can do it, but you do it for yourself. But I mean, it's also important to kind of stress the fact that the labels still exist. Major labels are brilliant, I kind of compare them a little bit to Real Madrid and their Galactico policy, where they actually wait for players to be developed and then they'll sign them because they know they're already stars. In the case of a major label, any band who signs to a major label who hasn't already established itself is an idiot. You occasionally get bands like, say, the Script or Codeline, who kind of like can be taken into a major label system, and they can be kind of like, I suppose, developed when there. But most bands who sign to major label nowadays should really be signed to a major label after they've already established their fan base, and the only reason they should be signed to a major label is basically to get more fans. They've got a dedicated fan base and they want to go beyond that. Major labels now are amazing at basically, like, I mean, once you're moving, once there's momentum there, they can kind of push you harder. In most cases, I think bands basically can stay self-sufficient. Bands can basically decide, okay, I can do this myself, you know. Again, I think the very important thing to kind of, like, I suppose, stress now is that, like, there are different reasons why people are in a band or making music now, and it's much more announced now than ever before. You've got the hobby musicians, you've got the people who've got no intention whatsoever of doing anything except this is a hobby. Once or twice a week they'll play with their mates, they'll rehearse, they'll record, they'll release, they'll go on tours, but it's not the be all and end all. You still have what I call the career bands, the bands who think they can make a career out of this, and we can divide that into two kinds: the bands who think they'll make a career out of this and who won't because they're useless, and the bands who think they'll make a career out of this and who will, because they'll persist, they'll have the right contacts, they'll have the right music, and that's where it all go. Above that then you've got more a kind of established acts, you've got superstar acts, you've got like acts who are kind of like, I mean, on a circuit who are fine. But let's break it back down to those kind of like, I mean, those early bands, the hobby bands and the career bands, you know. And like, I mean, they can all exist as self-sufficient entities. They can record themselves because of the democratization of recording methods. They can release themselves, because we all know how easy it is to release your music. And anyway, if you're releasing music, you're only releasing for profile, you're not releasing it for sales, and you can actually gig. Now the costs, I suppose, involved in all that are still onerous, you know. It's not an easy career. I mean, if you're looking for a neater hobby, you should really take up stamp collecting, because no one else is. You know, you really should. It's hard. It is very, very hard. And even though you are self-sufficient, the costs do mount. And there are many bands who I meet them all the time. Bands who kind of like, they're good. They're good at what they do. But like, they're struggling all the time, because in order to, I suppose, make more of their music, they have to go full time, and they can't go full time. Mm-hmm. They can only go full time if they're completely mad and demented. And the madness and the dimension is what drives on great music. And this is always my kind of thing sometimes with kind of hobby bands and part-time bands. It's like, I can't take you seriously. Why should I take you seriously if you're not taking yourself seriously? Grand, it's a nice album and all that, but I can't take you seriously because you're not taking your own music, your own ambitions and your own art seriously. Just a note on that whole thing about hobby bands. I'm not attacking hobby bands. It's great. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. I mean, a kid who learns to play the guitar when he's 10 or 11 has a talent he will be able to use when he's 70 or 80, you know, providing his fingers don't fall off and Freddy doesn't get arthritis. But the thing is that a lot of hobby bands have these expectations, you know, they have these amazing expectations and they don't realize that, like, I mean, people in the media, for example, you know, they are hassling people about reviews and stuff, but like you're just a hobby band. Why are you trying to do this? Why are you actually trying to kind of like get to a level where you yourself aren't serious about it? And this is the whole thing. I think bands find that very hard to understand, you know, that, like, I mean, even though they're a hobby band and only doing it part time, they still have all the expectations of a full time band. You know, they might have hired a manager or an agent, but like, I mean, that manager or an agent will tell you off the record that's really hard dealing with them because they have full-time jobs, and that's grand. It's perfect. I mean, I'm not getting at all at musicians who have full-time jobs, because these days you have to eat and music ain't going to pay the bills. But the point is, you have to taper your expectations accordingly.
More so than ever before, these days artists are using visual means to advertise their music. I asked Rachel McCormick if she agreed.
Videos now, they're very, very like essential in any artist's work, I think, now, because there's so many bands out there and they all want to put some sort of stamp on what they're doing, and I think the only way to go is actually getting yourself out and doing a good half decent, like, you know, music video. I mean, my first music video was for the first single for Every Time, and it was a two day shoot. It was the first day was in Kells, and then the second day was in Dublin in a boxing ring. And it did really, really well. I mean, it got on to the TB3, the morning show with Martin and Sybil. So it did really, really well. And I was absolutely chuffed how well it did, you know. Yeah. TB3 are great. They really just take a chance on Irish artists. And that's what I love about them, is that they really do back Irish artists. And like, I have to say that because they backed me, so, you know.
The Static shared their thoughts on Balcony TV.
It's really good, yeah. Like, as you say, it's done on a budget, but that's the idea. Just hear the music.
Yeah.
That's the main thing anyway.
Gets the music out there, has a following.
Well, that's another site, the Balcony TV site. People just go on and they click on one video, then click on the next video.
Or subscribe to it even, you know.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You Have a Gawk as well, and Finn Keenan and stuff, that sort of stuff. There is some nice videos out there, I think.
He does really good videos, yeah.
Hotsprocket's current music video is a one-shot or one continuous shot video. I asked them how many times it took to get it right.
Yeah, well, not as many as you think, but we kind of rehearse it a lot before actually filming, you know, individual parts. Section. And yeah, and there was a lot of stuff, but we done it in the day, like in the one day, so it was great. Crack.
That's the thing, you couldn't actually do 20 takes because by the end take it was actually like the cloud and the light and stuff. It was, it was 8 o'clock or something, so we only had another like half an hour or 40 minutes of light, so.
And it, like, 60 extras get real bored after like 3 full takes. You don't get much buzz out of them.
Yeah.
Remember when this 7-1 of them was like, first positions, and we're like, ugh. And from one of them, like, they'd be drinking cans, going, oh, shit, yeah, this is a take.
Well,
so,
I think Luke knew that.
Like, that's why it was like doing the little rehearsals for ages.
Yeah, then doing
the thing. Like, you built it up, like, just so it wasn't as, like, sitting around for eight, although there was loads of sitting around.
Neil from Easy Tiger shared his views.
Anybody can put up a video of themselves in their bedroom with a guitar. It's easier to find what music you want now in 2013 than any other time in history. If you want, you know, fusion, jazz, African drum beats, you can go on YouTube and you can probably watch somebody who's just learned how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to think outside the box on our music videos, and we tried to come up with some creative ideas. We released those videos, and we did feel that even though we weren't going to be touring the album as much as we wanted to have a tour film would be very important. So in November, we filmed in the Button Factory and we had a great crowd in there. And at the moment, we're still putting that DVD together. So between now and when the second album comes out, the final push or promotion, like you're asking for in your Earn Your Stripes, will be the DVD, which will feature the majority of the songs off Stripes.
I wanted to find out if radio stations are playing independent music. I started by asking Rachel McCormick and Kieran Black about their experiences.
I can see Irish radio stations changing for a more positive way. because when I started about 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, I think it was much, much harder to get your song played on a national radio station. It still is. It still is very, very tough.
Well, obviously, Near FM is a huge thing. You guys have a record label even based around it. Phantom has recently turned their tide and started playing a lot more local music, which is surprising. Nova Radio as the locals only, and they'll play, they'll randomly play stuff, and if the band's doing real well, they'll play it.
When I started, the first local radio station that took me on was the Ballyfermot one, the West Dublin 96 FM. They took me on first, and then I was very nervous because I never did like a radio station before, so that was great. And then I went on to Dublin South FM, and then I went on to Near FM, who are great every Tuesday night. They take artists in, and we have a great time. And then you have LMFM, but they're kind of like, they're actually coming, they're kind of more of a national kind of radio station now, but they help Irish artists as well. So definitely they were the people that really helped me out. And of course the national radio station that has really helped me out has been Radio Nova. Locals Only has really, really helped me out, you know. And you know, I've sent the album in and they've played the album on different shows.
We got it like a month, and then like a song was being played pretty much on Nova all the time. Like, yeah, you know?
Most of the airplay we get is in the late hours, but like we're on their C playlist, I think. So we get
this is for Jane, is it?
This is for Jane for the first track.
It went from A to B to C, but like it was on the C playlist when we went to give our last song.
Yeah,
at the last interview. Yeah.
No, unfortunately, I think our last song, because our last two tracks actually have explicit lyrics. I'm not entirely sure they're getting as much airplay. But back to other radio stations. Like the only reason I mention obviously Nova and Phantom is because they're the types of stations that would play our stuff. Like, I mean, the odd time I hear an FM, and it just kills me to hear the same tripe being recycled again and again and again. They're never going to let a young Irish independent band have the music played. Like, you know what I mean? If they are, it's going to be like 6 a.m, no one's going to hear it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's very, very tough. Like, it's very, very tough. You have to be a certain type of music and try to conform to actually to what they're looking for, as opposed to be individuals. Like,
there is one show like as well that has it as well, FM 104, the open mic, but again it's very hard to get on. So yeah, that's so they were the shows that helped me out.
And see, like in America where there's a college radio station was everything, that's where you'd find out where the new music was and everything, and Ireland doesn't have that. Like in America, it's the hippest thing in the world, you know. Every college radio defines the scene that town is or that college is, and we don't have that here. If we do, I can't find it on the radio waves.
By the truth, and we came here and sponsored by the youth. We came here with nothing particular to do. We came here and sponsored by the truth, and we came here and sponsored by the youth. We came here with nothing particular to do.
Chew Your Own Fat is a blog site that also operates a record label and organizes gig nights in Dublin. Paul told me about the blog.
One of the reasons I started the blog was because I was reading a lot of reviews of friends, bands, and stuff that did them no justice. It was sort of copy and paste. I can't even describe it. It's kind of bland. It's like factory belt reviews with no soul in it. And the reviewers and writers that I like the most always put their own spin on things, or they had a language that they used that was just, you could identify it and almost kind of know them through the words and the reviews and what they wrote. And I kind of wanted to do that because I would be quite an outspoken person anyway. So I just think honesty is key, because there's so much kind of kowtowing and stuff to, you know, buzz bands and things like that, that someone has to be able to come out and say, look, this isn't that good. This is sort of a very watered down version of something from the UK or America. It's not all that original, and you know, we're kind of sick of it. There's more out there. There's better bands out there. There's more underground bands out there that need the publicity. Most of the time, bands will be cool enough to be sort of like, well, yeah, it's only one opinion, you know, but there's always those crybabies who get onto you and are like, you know, you've got no taste or you guys are so unprofessional. But at the end of the day, we aren't professional. We're just a bunch of punk rock kids. Like, we're 90s kids. Like, we grew up listening to, you know, Sonic Youth, Nirvana and things like that. So the simplest way I can put this is, music is our religion, and if you make bad music, you're sort of pissing on our shrine. So we have the right to, you know, call it as it is, because we're consumers. We all are consumers, whether we like it or not. And if you don't like something, you should be able to say it without, you know, a fear of a backlash, you know? And that's just the way it is. But as regards to, like, kind of hobbyists and stuff, like, I think hobbyists know at this stage not to send anything into 2-year-old fat. I think they know at this stage not to bother, because anyone who knows the site knows that we will smell that rat and we will pick up on it and we will definitely mention it.
I asked Niler Nine and Paul about music collectives in Dublin.
For me, in terms of, like, the newest labels or newest collectives would be something like Toast Office Records, where a girl called Lisa Flum, who just released an EP, and I really like what she's doing, but there seem to be an actual roster on that label and stuff, so that'd be interesting to see what happens. It's nice when people go so far as to actually put a roster together. It's the same, in a way, it's the same way as curating for a blog, but obviously you're putting a lot more on the line. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd hope to see a lot more of it in the next few years. Certainly in terms of electronic music, there's lots of really interesting electronic music happening, really good and internationally recognized, which is, you know, isn't the point, but it is helpful when you are recognized outside your own country. And then there's no banner really for that. There are nights that happen, but we're such a small country that you can't really, like, exist in just one, where something like Poppy Galline, because it's kind of lo-fi indie, it's a very definable thing, and it kind of brings people together under that umbrella. That's interesting, because it's basically just it's kind of a support network, really, for, you know, here are bands that we like, here are bands that we'd like to release, here are bands that we like to play gigs with. But then you've got other collectives like 1111, who are doing really interesting things, both in music and in visual terms.
It depends on sort of genres and things like that. I mean, if you've got a couple of bands or two or three bands of different genres who pool their resources in things like merchandise, connections with merchandise, things like that, art for posters, designs, things like that, it can really, really benefit bands. But if you're sort of like, if you've got sort of a group of really competitive bands who all think they're better than each other, well, no, obviously it's not going to work. But I mean, you know, the sky is blue and water's wet. You know, it's just, it really depends on the attitudes of the bands. And I think I've seen a few collectives, not even collectives, but groups of bands who are friends, fall out or disband or whatever over really, really petty stuff. And if you're not a petty type, if you're really, really secure in your own band, but you love your friend's band as well, and you love their music, and you want to see them succeed just as much as you do, then it'll be fine. I mean, there's a line in a Val Normal song called "Fly the White Flag," and it's simply, we're in this together. And I think that really does sum it all up for me. We are in this together. Like, there's no one, we shouldn't be battling each other. We shouldn't be, you know, bad mouthing, giving out whatever. I mean, just if everyone just helped each other out just a little bit, I think there'd be, yeah, the Dublin music scene would be just fine.
That's all for this programme. We'd like to thank everyone who took part in this broadcast, Near FM, and the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland for their continued support. In this programme, we heard music from The Rattling Kine, Miniature Jack, The Hot Sprockets, Easy Tiger, Johnny and the Beep Beeps, and The Amazing Few. For more information, visit near.ie/lovers of life.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.